cliffcentral.com. This is Digital Influence with Ryan Hogarth on cliffcentral.com. And every week I am talking about the impact of technology and digital on our world and all aspects of it, the way the way we do business, the way we interact with each other, how things have changed, how our behaviors have changed, how the way we think about the world has changed. And then going forward, if you're in business, what should you be thinking about when it comes to digital and technology? If you're a customer, if you're looking for a job, any aspect of how we should be thinking about the world and technology as we go forward. And today I'm talking about a subject that's particularly close to me. I have a strong fondness, I think, as most people should do when it comes to education. And we're in this weird situation now when we look at how the world is changing and evolving. Our education system in many respects seems not to be keeping up. You know, and there's often the question of Are schools actually preparing our kids for the future that exists now, for the world as it is now? And what should we be thinking about when it comes to our kids? Another thing we hear a lot is that a large percentage of children are going to be taking jobs that don't even exist yet. So how do you prepare them for that sort of world? So I have with me in studio a high school teacher who's very involved in digitizing education and working on how do you take the analog world of education and digitize it. Her name is Annabelle. So firstly, Annabelle, thank you very much for taking the time to be here.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Excellent. Now, in the brief little chats we've had, you're clearly quite excited and quite passionate about it. You've been in education for 25 years,
yes.
So you spent a lot of time doing things the old way, and now restructuring, rethinking, relooking at it. So let's ask the question first of all. If I say digital transformation in education, from your perspective, yes, as a teacher, as an educator, someone who's doing it, what does that actually mean?
I think it needs to be a whole lot more than just putting education or resources onto a phone or onto a tablet. It's about learning to use technology responsibly. It's about integrating research skills. It's about making the students enjoy all the information that is there without overwhelming themselves in terms of accessing it. So all of those skills are completely new. When you used to have two books that a student could reference, it was easy for them to get information. Now it's how do they responsibly and ethically get information from the absolute glut of information that is out there. Over and above that, you want them to be able to use their technology effectively, and you want them to be able to, you want teachers to be able to transfer information in a language that students understand. Mm. And they are screen addicts. So
yes,
if you're not coming at them in a screen, you're probably losing them. Well, that's my belief anyway. And as much as we'd like them to be well-rounded individuals, we also need to be realistic because we want them to learn.
Mm.
My catchphrase is, what is the point of teaching? And hopefully it's learning. And if learning isn't happening, then we're actually not teaching. We're standing in front of a group of people and talking. We're not teaching.
Okay, so now you've been doing this for the last couple of years. And in that time, so let's talk about how it's going, and then I want to get into the details of what this actually looks like and how you do it. What has been the response in, well, let's take it from students, from parents, from school administration. So if we kind of take all of those three, how is it working? Is it bearing fruit? Is it worth doing? Is it going somewhere? Where does that all stand?
2.5 years later, yes, it's well worth doing.
Very. Well, that's a good point to start from.
Okay, but along the way, no one liked it. So I started off with a group of students. Well, my one class responded really, really well instantly. They happened to be a group of personalities that are particularly sort of studious, and learning is the top priority. So as soon as I did it with that group, I tried it with a group 1 year lower. And that group did the exact opposite. They rebelled. They're a very social group. They missed the fact that we were talking so much and all the distractions in the room. Because when you bring it onto a screen, you're zooming the focus of the education into a very small space. And that often removes distraction, which I see as an advantage. But not every student did. So they did a walkout on me.
What?
They did. That was their initial response. And they said that they, if I wasn't going to teach them in person, what was the point of personally coming to my class?
Wow.
So that was an initial response. We then talked it through, we processed it, and we said we'd give it a month's trial. After a month's trial, they were not willing to let it go.
Interesting.
So, but their gut reaction was a reflex kick. Parents generally came on board really quickly. They were supportive because I think they also saw the discipline that came with it. And school administration don't like change. And so they reacted that type of a response. Once they saw the overwhelming success and the buy-in from parents and students, they felt that they needed to kind of also give me a bit of a chance, and that's gone quite well.
Well, I think there are very few institutions that are more entrenched than education. I mean, the way we've done schooling has been that way,
hasn't it, just
for generations, hasn't it? So and
too static.
So you mentioned something interesting where they said, well, okay, well, if you're not going to be talking to them, why come to the class personally?
Correct.
What is the role of the teacher then? What we understand the traditional role, you stand up there and you unload information, everybody takes notes, underlines, highlights. So what is the role now?
The role, I feel, has changed. I believe that machines can disseminate information possibly better than human beings can. And my role has become that of facilitator, problem solver, troubleshooter, supporter. So I feel that my role is being very, very much redefined. And that has required quite a lot of reading, quite a lot of research from me, and quite a lot of training. I've been to bits and pieces of courses, but I've been motivated enough to, in essence, retrain myself. But my role has changed completely from, the sage on the stage. I'm now sitting and I'm on by their side. I walk around the room. I'm sitting on chairs working right next to students when they're having difficulties. Yeah. Becomes much more personalized, actually. And interestingly enough, the strangest offshoot has been how my personal relationships with students have improved, even though I'm more digitally connected with them. And that is because I'm caring about their personal need. They don't have to listen to me when I'm talking to Johnny or to Tabo about his problem.
Yes.
They're engaged with their own learning and they're only interacting with me on their problems, which makes it so much more personalized. It's been awesome.
So let's now get into the nitty-gritty of how this actually – how you do it. So it's a lot more than just taking a textbook, dumping it on making it a PDF and putting it on a tablet. And you've been very involved with that in the actual digitizing process.
Yes.
So how does this look? So if we take grade 10 science, I guess I am as old as that comment suggests, but okay. So grade 10 science, which would normally be open your textbook and a teacher talking.
Yes.
What's different? How is it done digitally? What have you done with it?
Okay, I've done one brand. There are a multitude of different ways of doing it, and I have a number of colleagues who have engaged with it slightly differently, particularly for different subjects. But for science, what really works well is to get a concept across and then to reinforce that with some practice examples. And so what I'm doing is, instead of me standing in front of the class and giving the lesson, I've pre-recorded the lessons on a tablet. So it's
with yourself, like
with myself,
as a video audio.
No, it's a smart board screen, a moving screen on a tablet.
Okay,
basically.
Okay.
And so they've got my voice in their ear. They're seeing the problem unfolding in front of them pretty much as if they were watching the board, and they just don't see me in front of them. But they know me, and I'm the same voice that talks to them when I'm solving problems. So I think that's really quite nice to have that congruency. Although I feel that my material would probably help a student who didn't have a teacher at all, I think it's best if there's an absolute synergy between the teacher that talks on the machine and the teacher that's talking to them in class. And then what happens is, after a short, about 10 minutes of video material, which takes them about 20 to 25 minutes to watch because they're taking notes all the time, they're pressing pause whenever they're getting a little bit lost, they're able to rewind, I encourage them not to take notes verbatim, but rather to try and make mind maps, try and make bulleted points, because that puts it through the central processing unit. They're thinking about it before they're putting it on paper. And then what happens is I give them a quiz, and that is also digitalized. So they go onto a device, they go into a quiz, and they check their work. The order's a little bit muddled. They come into my lesson. They do a quiz from yesterday's work, watch the video for tomorrow's work, so they can continue to prepare in the afternoon if they want to. If they finish that video early, they can carry on with another subject's homework. I try very hard philosophically to minimize homework. I feel that our generation are absolutely overwhelmed with so many things. So I really work at minimizing homework, and everything happens inside the classroom. It comes from a theory called flipped learning. But flipped learning means all the learning takes place outside the classroom and the conversation inside.
Yes.
So I've kind of branded it inside, upside down classroom. So it's flipped, but it's all happening inside my room. And I facilitate at all points. So when they're quizzing, they can ask me questions to get started on a question. If they don't understand something when they're watching a video, I'm right there to help them. But they take the reins of control of their own learning. And I say it very explicitly, regularly, to high school students, who's in charge of your learning? And they need to say, I am. And then they are guiding, and I just set pace setters, for want of a better word. And that's how we move through things. So they've got a textbook, and they've got materials on the side, but the learning is happening through the device at their own pace. And it really, really has been very successful.
Now, We're certainly in the early days of this globally. I think everyone in the world is struggling a little bit about where do we go with our education. And what you've just outlined and described is very progressive. It sounds very positive. But even within your own environment, are you still considered a sort of pilot project, or is this now spilling into other subjects, other teachers, other areas?
I probably know four teachers who have wholeheartedly dived into technology. So it really is a bit on the back foot. And another thing, that if you look at what I'm doing, I'm still working towards good old-fashioned tests and exams.
Yes.
I'm preparing students for that. I'm working mainly in 10, 11, and 12. We've got this thing called a matric exam. It wags the dog. I'm going to do what needs to be done in order to get the best matric results for my students, because that's how I'm going to platform them forwards. What's happening quite progressively at the moment, and I'm doing a little bit of work with this, is what's known as project-based learning. And that's happening mainly in 7, 8, and 9, where you've got these young thinking individuals between the ages of about 13 and 15. And they go and they take topics and they explore them, and they need to make their thinking explicit. And you talked earlier about preparing them for careers that they don't even know exist. What do we just need? We need reading, thinking, articulate individuals who are able to distill information, and that will be useful no matter what they go on to do. And project-based learning is all about that. There's some schools that have set up maker spaces where students are able to express their learning through art forms, through creative forms, through 3D printing. So, you know, all of that is happening. It's the tip of the iceberg.
But is there a growing appetite for it? If you look in your own environment,
Okay. I think particularly from the parent body, they can see that this digital thing's coming, this monster's coming. They themselves feel out of their own depth, and they want their children to be prepared. So they want something that involves getting them ready for that career that doesn't exist yet.
Okay.
And these are the kinds of things that inspire hope in a parent body. And so certainly in private education, that is happening.
All right. And what we haven't touched on, and we're not even going to have time to touch on, yes, but I think it's worth at least highlighting the point that you are in private education, and these are initiatives in private education. We have a massive gap or a lot of thinking to do when it comes to public education, because the state of that, you know, we can't even get old school textbooks to our kids in many cases.
Sure.
But hopefully it starts to get driven. Well, I don't know. I mean, this sort of thing's got to catch on, and I don't know, as briefly as possible, where do we stand? Where do we go with that? How do we address that challenge?
Well, at the moment, we're sitting with the textbooks being given to some students on a tablet and them not even knowing how to access it because the teacher training hasn't happened properly. So that, I'm not saying it hasn't happened anywhere, but the large areas haven't. So that's a concern. And I feel that technology is going to do one of two things. My hope is that technology is going to narrow the gap between private and government education, because the resources that are going to get developed are going to be so awesome that it's going to mean that you become less dependent on the person standing in front of the room.
And
the facilities all around. However, I'm frightened that the opposite is going to happen. Mm. I think at this stage, it's actually widening the gap between private and government education. In many cases, there are pockets of excellence. Mm. I mean, there are some awesome government schools that have wholeheartedly embraced this and are doing incredible work.
Because in theory, the cost will come down to a point where it would be cheaper to deliver the technology than to deliver the paper. So at that point, it would make sense. And I don't think we're too far from that.
Probably not.
All right, fine. So to sum up, we're in the very early stages of it, but there are at least very encouraging signs right now where schools are looking at how do we rethink our entire education thing to prepare kids for a world that is very different to the one we grew up in. So Annabelle, thank you very much for taking the time to come in and very briefly explain where digitization in education is going. And if you're a parent, it should be something you're thinking about. You should be engaging your school, your kids' school, about this and how they take it forward. But there can be no doubt that digital is going to impact education in a massive way, because it has to.
It has to, as it impacts our world.
Absolutely. So you've been listening to Digital Influence with Ryan Hogarth. Thanks for joining me, and see you again next time. Goodbye. Cliffcentral.com.